Jesus is teaching, and apparently there's a bit of a crowd, and there's enough of a crowd that somebody decides that he's going to air his family's business in front of everybody. He asked Jesus to make his brother divide the inheritance. What an odd request. We can actually pull a couple of things from a simple request like that. It tells us that he's not the oldest brother. It's very probably pretty likely that dad is dead, and now his brother, the firstborn son, is the one who is kind of controlling everything, gets the lion's share of it all. And I honestly, and I've said this before, I think that's a good system. It may be related to the fact that I'm the firstborn son, but whatever. And as a result, it seems like Jesus sniffs out pretty quick that there maybe isn't the most noblest reason that this guy is asking for Jesus to make his brother give him stuff and probably land. On the one hand, the guy making the request is actually honoring Jesus, culturally speaking. He's identifying him as a teacher with authority who has the kind of moral fortitude and wisdom to make those kinds of decisions. In other words, it's very unlikely that this guy is just running around to everybody saying, hey, can you make my brother do that? So he's actually showing Jesus a fair amount of respect. Jesus doesn't take the bait. And in fact, he pushes back harder than usual for somebody who I think is more or less just making a request. He says, man, who made me judge? Well, give it a little while and he will be the judge of all humanity, but that's a different thing. Jesus then cuts right to the heart of the matter. And he says, beware of the poison that is coveting and greed. Then he tells a parable, one of the easiest parables, I think, or at least one of the clearest. It actually hits pretty hard, but it's easy to understand, where there's a rich guy who has a big harvest. He builds even bigger barns to store all his stuff. I guess he's not worried about rats. And then he decides he's going to live it easy, and then he dies the next day. Maybe a modern equivalent is somebody who wins the lottery and is hit by a bus or something like that. And so Jesus is showing us a little peek into the room that we all prefer to, I don't know, ignore, that human life is really fragile. And it can be taken away at any moment. And then that leads to the question that Jesus has been sort of setting up this whole time. Why waste your time on gathering as much as you can? Now, if you are in church on Thanksgiving Eve, it either means somebody with a lot of leverage dragged you here, or this is not your first rodeo. And so for me to just say, life is way more than our possessions, is probably not even the 1,000th time you have heard somebody say that. Like, yes, 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 we all know that. Then why does it need to be said again? And then at the end, why does Jesus also say, so it is for people who are, I'm paraphrasing, rich in possessions, but they are not rich toward God. What does being rich toward God mean? How do you be rich toward God? Certain traditions, Christian traditions, might say, well, you do a lot of really good stuff. And that acts as kind of like a treasure that you store up. That's wealth toward God. And And it's not wrong to do a lot of good stuff. Like, please do that. Everybody needs that. But my own Lutheran sensibilities just immediately get itchy when you hear something like that. And in fact, I don't think that's what Jesus is talking about at all. But to get there, we need to take another route. I'm not known for being really good at planning ahead. This is not a secret. You can ask Elizabeth if you really want to. She'll spill all the tea. So I found myself about 2 hours ago at the grocery store, you know, on Thanksgiving Eve, because I'm not a very wise person. And I knew it was going to be a zoo. It was a zoo. The only way I was able to cope was put headphones on, and I listened to like the playlist that I use right before a grappling competition, you know, just to kind of get you really fired up. And partway through the mess, I found myself thinking, why do we do this? Why do we do this to ourselves? Like, nobody here is happy right now. This is a very sad store. People look stressed out, except for the kids who don't know any better. And so I'd ask you this, like, why do you celebrate Thanksgiving? Not why do we collectively, that's an easy answer, but why do you? Like, make it really personal. I know as a kid, every once in a while, we would try to go around and say what we're thankful for. I don't know if some of you still do that. I can't remember the last time I've done that. I do remember some of my responses as a kid, and they were always about something that I have. It's not wrong to be grateful for things, but it is a possession. And then, you know, you grow up a little bit, and I don't know, this year mom and dad want to do that again, so we're going to say what we're thankful for, and you realize, well, wait, I want to at least say the right thing, so I'll say, like, I'm grateful for my family or something like that. You know, tell them the right answer, even if that's not the true answer. Why do you celebrate Thanksgiving? Somehow we know that we're supposed to be thankful. But what does it give you? And is that even the right question to ask? In fact, that's actually a very American question to ask. What do I get out of this? See, we have other ways of accumulating things. It's not just possessions. In fact, human beings can find their sense of safety, sense of self, sense of security in just about anything. It's possessions are a very easy, concrete thing, but we can find our sense of security in our family, in our employment, in our community, skills, education. We can just name it, and we can find a way to find our sense of security in that. And just like Jesus' parable of this rich guy who suddenly finds himself dead, all of that can be taken away. I mean, I'm an elder geriatric millennial, as they say. So what that basically means is that I was born in the 80s, and I've even in my adult life, I've seen the market crash like 3 or 4 times. And then you hear everybody panic. Because, like that guy who thought he had it all, it can all be taken away. So why do you celebrate Thanksgiving? I think a helpful answer to that question is probably going to be related to the question, what does it mean to be rich toward God? We can say that we do not think that our sense of happiness and safety, security, joy, whatever, is in possessions. things or in anything other than God. The reality is that our lives are probably not going to reflect that all that well. I can say that I really don't need and will not gain a huge amount of benefit from another guitar. The reality is if you stole my phone, you'd find a couple of tabs from different guitar shops looking at their newest selection. We can say that we don't find our security in our 401k or retirement plans or our community, our family, whatever, but the instant there's a disruption in that, how are we going to respond? Probably going to be really afraid. I think the antidote to that is gratitude. Because we'll often say, it's not wrong, you know, especially as we're reading the Gospels and especially the book of Luke, where Jesus is highly critical of wealth. We will always say, well, there's the caveat that it's not wrong to be wealthy. It's not wrong to have a lot. And it's not necessarily. So how do we, as people living in 2025 in the United States, and therefore some of the wealthiest people ever to have lived, at the same time, can say with a straight face, and life is so much more than what we have? I think the answer actually is gratitude. Because what does gratitude do? What does being thankful do? It puts things in their right place. It's the recognition that a whole lot went into that thing that I have no control over, and it is therefore a gift. The fact that you and I were born where we were born and live where we live is entirely beyond our control, and yet it determines so much about what we have. The proper response to that is gratitude. And if you're grateful for something, it has a tendency to lose its control over you. Because it recognizes that in some shape, way, or form, it is a gift. The Apostle Paul in the 2 Corinthians reading, the epistle reading, says God gives seed for the sower. Can you make a seed grow? No. No, you can put it in the ground, you can water it and provide the light and the right amount of light and temperature and soil conditions. You can do all of that. You did not make that seed grow. And yet God makes it grow for you. The things that you have, the people in your life that you are grateful for, you may have some small degree of control over that, but control is usually an illusion. And if you're grateful for them, truly grateful, you'll start to see that just about everything you have in your life is a gift. And if the things that you have in your life, whether they be possessions or people or community, a good reputation, skills, education, people just to love, and you see them really as a gift, we see them as a gift, then that implies that there's somebody who gave that gift. It implies that there are things that we get to enjoy that are beyond our control. They're given as a gift. And so long as we don't worship that gift, and instead we learn that the proper response is to worship the one who gave us that gift, then I think we'll learn more what it means to be rich toward God. Happy Thanksgiving. Please rise.